Welcome to episode 63 of Sound Out Wave, the first podcast to reach planet Earth from Cybertron. I'm Nell, and I'm great at Transformers.
And I'm Greg, and I'm getting better at Transformers.
And this week, we check in on that good old boy, Optimus Prime, issues 1 and 2. This cover.
Look at that.
Right off. Striking.
Who is this? That's, Bus Man? He turns into a bus?
Please.
Oh.
Call him Orion Pax.
Please. Call me Orion Pax. He's got a gun. Looks like he just fired it.
He's got a lightning bolt on it.
He's got a lightning bolt on it. Wonder what that's about. Wonder if we'll get anything about that in this issue.
Let's find out.
We got some credits there. Good old Sir Jonathan of Barber. It's Kay Zama doing art in this.
Yes.
And I like it. I have reservations because I think there's a little bit of issues with readability in some panels, but like a lot of it looks like there's parts that look really Jack Kirby to me. I like the art in this.
Yeah, no, I do too. And I wonder if we have the same issues because there were times when I was kind of having trouble trying to figure out who was who at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I haven't met Kay, but everybody I know loves her, so I'm sure she's amazing. But yes, I do like her artwork a lot. And then Josh Bertram's colors on this are astonishing. They're so good.
Everything looks rad.
It looks really good. Good looking book here.
So we have our recap page. We have this guy, a bus man, I assume is his name, turns into a bus, saying like, hey, this is Earth. Now it's part of Cybertron. It's technically part of the Cybertron Council of Worlds, which is like a UN thing, but whatever, it's Cybertron, let's be honest.
Right. Well, I mean, then that kind of becomes part of their conversation later.
Yes, that's very much the sort of part of the firestorm of these issues here.
Yeah. And so, we're just getting a recap. The title is Optimus Prime of these books. That's just straight up what they're called. And this is picking up from Revolution. This is now following Optimus and his team on Earth.
Finally, some comic books about Optimus Prime.
It is. I mean, but if we think about it, he kind of hops around. He hasn't been super prevalent he has in certain titles, but like you think about, Megatron lives in More Than Meets the Eye now, or pardon me, he lives in Lost Light now. But yeah, for a while, especially at the beginning of this entire journey that we've been on, Optimus and Megatron were like, bye.
The first year or so, they were not present.
A couple years,
yeah. And we remember good old Aileron saying like, hey, by the way, are God to us.
Right, she's reminding us that he is very important. He's like a deity to them.
But also, he seems to make mistakes, which she recognizes.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, we just beat Galvatron and Sentinel from Combiner Wars and the stuff just before that. And we have a team with Soundwave on it and RC and a bunch of cool people.
Yeah. And TC's cuddling his puppy, and that's very important.
Yeah. We love that puppy.
She's a good puppy. So, that's where we're at. We're picking up where Revolution left off, and we're getting into it. We kind of get a rundown of names will kind of be the characters here, the players in this story. Everybody looks great. And we get introed immediately. We get a feel for these great colors and this really cool art style. And we meet Hefter.
I love Hefter. Hefter's a cool guy.
He's super cool. Look at him posing in this first picture.
He's got great colors. He's against a cool background. I want to hang out with this boy.
For sure.
And we're immediately told he wants to be an astrophysicist. He loves space.
My first note here just says immediately this issue just displays the stance of our show.
Yes, exactly.
Like he loves space. He wants to be an astrophysicist. But his alt mode was for loading and unloading. So he didn't get to be an astrophysicist.
Right. He carries things around, and so
his name is Hefter.
Naturally, he gravitates toward being a Decepticon, who, if we remember, are rather against the functionist ideas of you are what your old mode is.
Yes.
And Because of that, he is taken into police custody and killed by cops. And immediately, I think, oh, that's what we're tackling in these issues.
Yep, we're jumping right into it. It does not pull punches.
Nope.
It's super sad. Like, when we see the result of him after he is taken in by the police.
He's introduced and killed on the same page.
It's super sad.
It's super sad. It's heavy. This is some serious subject matter to cover.
Immediately very heavy. And so then we get to this next page. But we were introduced. Yeah, like you said, we were completely introduced to him. We knew what he wanted. And now we know that he has been killed. And we realize the person saying this is Tappet, who we met.
Yeah.
Back when everybody was coming back to Cybertron
in the very beginning of all of this. Yeah. Yeah. He was one of the first nails that we met.
Yeah. He looks like he's wearing a snow hat.
Yeah, he's got his little South Park hat on.
Yeah. And so we can see he's in a room with Orion Pax and presumably another officer at this point. And we see this is pre-war. This is 4 million years ago.
Right. And the intro page has told us this guy's name is Outback. Tappet is saying this to Orion, and Orion is saying, please, call me Orion Pax.
I knew you were going to love it, because he literally does say please.
Yes, and he says, well, I'm sorry, this sort of thing happens, but we'll figure it out. And Tappet is saying, we already have figured it out. They killed him because he's a Decepticon.
Yeah, Tappet's not under any sort of... Like, he knows what happened here. Everybody does. Like, this guy openly identified as a Decepticon. He was taken into custody. Now he's dead. It's not a leap that we're making here.
Right.
Of course, Orion Pax is asking him to calm down. And he even mentions the fact that, and it's even sadder now. He's like, oh, Hefter was your conjunct Zandora. He asks if they were married.
Yeah. And he's saying, look, I don't judge whatever you guys had. And Tappet, rightly so, is like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Like, Tappet's in the right here. Tappet has every right to be as upset as he is. Like he says, he's saying, this guy, Outback, killed Hefter, and Orion Pax is asking if they were married. Like, what does that have to do with anything? It doesn't matter.
Right. And so Tappet is being sort of pushed out and yelling at things, and Outback is saying, good luck, hero cop. Optimus is not in very good with the crime boys.
That's true. Crime boys know about him. They've got a tab on him. So, of course, and immediately also... We have really great timing because this show is blessed.
Exactly.
There was really no reason for it to turn out the way it did that we did Chaos Theory right before this. That was never planned to do Chaos Theory and look back at Orion's time in Rodian and see the start of the Decepticons.
As luck would have it, we were right there. That's exactly where these books pick up, more or less.
So it's a perfect hopping off place from Chaos Theory into the start of this book. So we're pretty good at this. But yeah, so we know Orion Pax and his dealings with crime boys. We just saw it. And this intro, and of course our narration is from Optimus, and he's just kind of giving a little bit of backstory, because not everybody has just reread all of these books before getting into this.
And these do technically have number one on the cover, so it should be pretty easy for people to jump in.
Yes.
We're explaining the Primes and how the Primes... had become legend, and in their place, we get sort of these shitty dudes who call themselves Primes, like Zeta.
Oh, look who's here. Yes, so...
He does say, Orion, my lad, which I think is cute.
It is cute, and also just very funny. And immediately we get a sense of the kind of Prime Zeta was, because, like, we know, we've heard about Zeta before, at least if you've been reading these books, because, yeah, like you said, this is a first, this is a number one, so... It's built for people who haven't read all these books before. But we know Zeta. He was Prime before Optimus.
Right.
And was kind of groomed a little bit. But even then, so we know that they knew each other before Zeta became Prime, because Shockwave had kind of picked both of them out. And so Orion addresses him as Zeta, and he immediately is like, we have to keep up appearances. You have to call me Zeta Prime, which is interesting because Optimus is very much, aside from how much you love making fun of, especially, you love making fun of the fact that he's always saying, please call me this. But
he seems very informal. The title Prime is not,
yes, it's not that important to him if people call him Optimus Prime. Like, he's never insisting that be the case. So immediately we know what the deal is here with Zeta. Right.
And Zeta is saying, so what do you think about that dead Decepticon that all of the cops killed? And Prime is saying, like, I'm sure there's a very good reason we had to murder that guy in a jail cell. And Zeta's like, perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
That's what we need from you. Great. And of course, then Zeta is, so immediately, yes, they're like, okay, this is why Zeta's here, or that's what he's catching up on.
Right.
Which gives us further indication of the kind of person that Zeta is. And Zeta's now just, possibly he's here for a different reason, because then he immediately jumps into talking about the Matrix, and they reestablish for, in case people don't remember.
Right.
The one he has isn't real.
Yes, which, and he even says, so I have something to ask you. And Prime's like, you mean about how the Matrix is fake?
Like, with like 20 dudes standing around them.
Right. And immediately Zeta's like, hey, I just said we have to keep up appearances about things.
God, man. I was going to say you might be Prime right. next, but I don't know. He's like, shut up.
And, you know, Optimus is saying, like, please, Prime, that could never happen. I'm just a humble law enforcement officer.
And, yeah, so, of course, now Zeta is, they're walking towards him, then they go look outside, which, yeah, we know that there's riots going on. This is when the Decepticons are picking up, clearly. That's why Hafter is dead now. And so Zeta's, it's almost like Zeta is aware of what's going to happen, like, to him or just in general, the fact that he's like, listen, Orion, you might get the Matrix. I mean, this totally real Matrix very soon.
Right.
Because he's saying that the people of Cybertron need symbols and order, and sometimes that's the same thing. So they're just kind of like building the scene for us. They're setting the scene for what we know is going to happen. And the atmosphere of Cybertron right now, which is pre-war, but like, yeah, it's about to go off on Cybertron. And of course, then they also discuss the fact, because we're establishing things here, Optimus doesn't believe, he's not religious. He doesn't.
Right. Doesn't believe this hokum about primes and. Right. He says, do I believe a crystal was created by Solomus the Wise from his prison, then forged into the hilt of a magic sword? Not really.
Gonna be frank with you, man. Nah, I don't think so. And this was also then a roundabout way to bring us back to the task at hand, which is Zeta saying, Optimus, it's good, or sorry, Orion, it's good you want the truth, because people deserve to know the truth, like the fact that a Decepticon traitor got what was coming to him. And so he's essentially saying, hey, go tell all these people the thing I want you to tell them.
Make an example out of this murder of a Decepticon.
Yeah.
And he's
saying that's the truth that they need. That's what he's calling his truth.
And he does call him Lifter. And Optimus says his name was Hafter. There you go, everybody. Optimus is a good cop who remembers the names of the people that the cops killed. And so we go to Mexico City on Earth today.
Yes, we do. P.S. As they were looking outside, yes, there was a demonstration going on with like protesters, and then it kind of turned into a big fight. So that was also what was happening.
Yes, it was leading up to what seems to be riots. And as we come to Mexico City, hey, there's riots. They seem to follow this guy.
Yes, lots of riots, this time with little soft robots. So yeah, We're in Mexico City, and now we have Aileron, and she's kind of, she's witnessing this from above, and is, we know, she, like, if we think back to Revolution and everything, she's a little jaded now. Like, she's learned some stuff since her time first being roped into this group of people.
This is, she's come a long way.
Yes, she has. And we meet some new people. We see who our squad is here.
Yeah, I love this squad. They got some great names.
They do.
We're racing around trying to make sure, A, that we get this weapon cache that we've heard of out of the hands of public, and also don't kill anybody in the process.
Yeah. Please, we do have there are a lot of humans.
Right. We do have Aileron's voiceover going during all of this, saying, catching us up on a lot of, like, hey, there's colonies, we came back, stuff like that. And so let's meet these people.
Yeah, let's meet them. Because we see them all in their alt modes at first, as they're racing towards the riot. And we have Aileron, she's almost kind of watching over them. She's like, okay, Prime trusts you guys, just be careful. And then they start transforming as they're looking for this weapons cache. And yeah, we get this great page where everybody, there's a quick little roll call. And we have Euler and Slide. And they are the truck and the tanker. Like, she's the tanker in the back. And he's...
They're divisions, so they're a linked pair.
Yes, so they're brother and sister. And, or, you know, as you would call it with these two. And then we have some Eukaryans. We have Gimlet.
What a great name.
It's such a good name. He's a big old lobster. And Bump, who turns into an armadillo. And then we have Midnight Express from Kamenes.
Right.
Which, that name fucking rules. Immediately when, like, Midnight Express showed up, I was like, okay, listen, I don't know when it would be, but he and Pop and Lock have to have a thing. I don't care what it is, but I'm claiming this guy right now. He's great. And then we also have Roulette. Oh,
yes. Well, which one of them is, like, we see them all in their alt modes here. Is Midnight Express he's one that's like this bullet train looking thing?
Yes.
Awesome. That's rad.
Yeah. It's really, these guys are great. They're so cool. Immediately. I love this team. It's so good. Because then, Roulette is the hot little car next to him.
Oh, I see.
She's from Velocitron.
Yes. I love it. And they're immediately confronted by a human with some kind of giant weapon.
There's the weapon.
Right.
At least one of them.
Yeah, at least one weapon. And Aileron is like, hey, I think that's probably it.
That might be the one. Midnight Express, immediately after I was like I saw him, was like, he's great. Great name. Great look.
This is going to be awesome.
He immediately gets shot in the face. I was like, damn it. Did I do that to you? I'm so sorry. he gets shot with this weapon. And so, of course, they go to retaliate like you do when you are a giant robot who knows how to, just like, has guns built into you. They're like, oh, hey, let's go get that human. And everyone's like, what? You guys, you can't just, you know, respond violently towards these humans.
Right. They're not like Autobots or Cybertronians. Right. They're a little more delicate.
Yeah, we gotta handle this a bit differently. So she jumps in and she picks up the human by his coat like you would like a tiny kitten. By the, what do you call that?
The scruff.
Yeah. And she even yells at him. She's like, just knock it off. Like, stop that.
Yeah. Get bad.
Yeah. It was a bad thing you did.
Bops him on the nose.
And of course, all the other humans are running.
Right. I want to say, I like that Gimlet says, in the name of the Prime, we strike for justice. Which, if you've ever, like, been three Gimlets down, that's usually how I get to.
I love it. I love it. That's a new phrase. We're using that now.
And then we get a bunch of faces we recognize jumping in here.
Yes. So after Aileron kind of is like, okay, you guys, good work, but also, geez. Hey, we know these guys. We got Optimus. We got RC. We got the sweetest boy ever. And it has their, like, descriptions underneath their name. So it says, like, Optimus Prime, Autobot leader, RC, right. used to being the angry one, Soundwave, Cybertron's sweetheart. It says things like that. Oh, and Jazz, trying to be the laid-back one. Yay. Hi, guys. I'm glad to see you. And, of course, they're all, like, action-y jumping in, like...
Doing a cool rappelling from a helicopter type shot.
Right. And they're jumping from Autobot City. And I was like... At least I think that's who, like, I think the Titan is the one in the air.
That looks about right.
Yeah, because he's, like, he's in that mode, or, like, it's that right shape, which is wild, because, of course, we're used to Metroplex, who
right is
doesn't
a very reliable
fly.
Right. Metroplex, or, like, yeah, he can. As far as we've seen him, usually just a big city. Even yes. seeing him turn into boy mode is, like, a huge, crazy thing.
Like, whoa, he's waking up, you guys. Yeah.
But seeing Autobot City fly in the air is pretty nuts.
Yeah. I want to live there.
I will say, one of my absolute favorite things in all of Thor was Asgard was just, like, materialized in Broxton, Oklahoma.
Mm.
And the cops came up to Thor and said, like, this is somebody's land. You can't just put this here. And so Thor is like, all right. And he lifts Asgard 6 feet in the air and says, it is no longer on their land. So anytime I think of floating cities, that's generally what comes to mind.
That's where you go. I like it. It works.
But yes, Jazz is saying, like, what happened to all these humans?
Right. And he's saying, like, luckily, like, there are some trampled people, but it wasn't by Cybertronians, at least. Like, they're not dead. They were just, because, of course, there was like a riot going on. So, or at least a protest of some sort. So the fact that they all scattered, understandably, when giant robots showed up, that's where, yeah, his concern is with little humans.
And he's speaking a little bit of Spanish, which I think is cute.
Yeah.
I'm very strongly in favor of aliens learning other human languages in addition to English.
It's darling. He's darling. I love Jazz so much. I want more good stuff from him. He's a good boy. And so then we see, don't worry, you guys, Midnight Express is fine.
Right. We'll see more of Midnight Express. Don't you worry.
You can't get rid of him that easily. RC is even like, get up, you're fine, quit milking it. And yeah, Aileron's like, I mean, listen, RC's kind of being a dick, but she's right, he only got shot with his little gun, I found it. And she's like handing it to Optimus. And so now we're also getting kind of what the goal of this team is, like, because obviously they said they were looking for a weapons cache, and yeah, and that is what they're doing. They're trying to essentially retrieve Cybertronian technology. Because you could tell when the guy was holding it, it wasn't...
Right, it's like, not... It was... Not an Earth gun.
Right. So Optimus is trying to address the crowd, also in Spanish.
Right. And we hear a little bit more about the Tyrest Accord, which is, I guess, the thing where, hey, we can't allow Cybertronian technology to fall into any other, like, aliens' possessions.
Yes. That was part of the deal that they... created. And Optimus is trying to say to the crowd, like, these aren't safe. Like, you should not be using Cybertronian technology.
You don't know how, you don't understand.
Right. It's bad. Don't do it. And RC is like, they don't care. They're not going to listen to you. But I mean, nice try. And she does point out, it's very cute. She's like, why is everybody wearing faceplates? He's like, oh, I mean, they all kind of want to look like me.
They're
adorable.
They're into primes.
The prime is this spring's hottest fashion. It's the hottest trend. You got to get a faceplate. But they do. If you go back up to their intro, all of them are wearing faceplates. It's adorable. It's very
I love
cute.
It. And so we do see a human here speaking English, and Optimus is saying, like, or no, this is Jazz, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jazz is saying, like, oh, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
I'm trying to help. And she's saying, like, why are you trying to help us when you're about to destroy the world? And he's like, what?
I ain't trying to. And she's like, I don't want to hear it. Get away from me.
That's crazy. Why would people have problems with us being here?
Poor sweet Jazz. He does always act very, and again, I know, don't worry, everybody, we both know a lot of this stuff is just here to establish for new readers.
Right.
Like, we're, this is the state of things.
Humans, we're just having some fun here as we go along.
We're just having some fun, but Jazz does often look very surprised that humans do not want him around. around. Which, I mean, I get. When you're as good a boy as Jazz is, you're just like, what? What gives? Everybody else likes me. But so then we go back to Optimus holding this teeny gun in his hand, and Aileron's still holding the human, who's just kind of pouting.
It's adorable because it looks like an inverse of the usual Transformer setup. Like, he looks like an action figure with an action figure gun being held by what is essentially a giant toy.
You're right. A nice little reverse there.
Yeah, they're saying, hey, how did what is our technology doing on this planet? But at the same time, RC has let us know, like, that's a sailed ship. The Cybertronian technology's been out here for a while.
Right. And they know. So, like, they know that it's out here. They're just now trying to retrieve it. Because, of course, even, you know, the things that have taken them down on Earth in the past, if we think about, like, the zombie cone heads and stuff, it's like, oh, shit. There's a bunch of our stuff here, and it shouldn't be here. But, so, Optimus is like, okay, it's a bad situation. So, he's getting ready to move on it in another direction, but he's leaving Jazz here, and his pals Soundwave and RC are going to come with him because he's got to go visit somebody.
His best friends.
His sweetest pals.
And yes, we go back to 4 million years ago, Cybertron, just before the war. And Optimus shows up at a bar, which is an establishment he's would never attend otherwise.
He would never, ever.
Yes, there's Outback slugging back Energon.
He's just shotgunning them.
And he says, hey, we need to... A lot of people have been asking me about that Decepticon who died in police custody. What's going on with that?
Can we discuss that real quickly? And, of course, Outback responds by pointing a gun at Optimus, because that's what you do. But he's trying to prove a point here. We realize very quickly. He's like, hey, I have a gun on you. How do you respond? What do you do? It's like essentially trying to tell us that this is the position he was in with Hefter. Or maybe not Hefter specifically, but kind of trying to justify himself here.
Right. And he's saying, this is what happens anytime any Decepticons all want us dead.
Right. I mean, that's his narrative. That's what he's believing.
He believes, yes, everyone wants them dead and, you know, they need to kill before they get killed.
And he wants this smart alecky hero cop to tell him how you solve this problem. And Optimus slams his head into the
rips
bar.
The gun away, and he says, I do my job. Because he's like a good cop, and this is what good cops do.
So I really like these panels. Again, Josh's use of color here also stunning. It's so good. It's like acid green background. It's great.
Especially with the gritty line work here and how intense everything is. It's really well done.
It's so, yes. The art and the colors just sing together. It's really good. So if you're not looking at these books, go look at these books. They're really pretty.
Go look at these books.
But yeah, so he's throwing it back at Outback, saying you're bad. You're bad at this. If that's
you're a bad cop. You're a Lego movie. And he's saying, "All right, hero cop, why don't you go do your thing? And then once all the Decepticons kill everybody, you can deal with it then." Which happens. But Optimus is saying, you know, I thought things were getting better, but I guess the world is a violent place and things are only getting worse, is what he's told, and he's starting to believe it.
We can see he's looking a little down in this last panel. But I know this is just here to, like, set the scene, but I don't know, part of it's funny to me where I'm like, you guys just, like, nearly killed each other in a bar. And Optimus is just like, all right, bye. Like, I'll see you at work tomorrow.
We'll deal with this later.
Come to my office later. But we cut back to our present day. And here we go. Autobot City, up flying. I thought that was it. But then, like, afterwards I was like, wait, am I just making that up? Did I just dream that our Titan can fly? No, he can. He's in the air. And they're above Washington, D.C.
Which Washington loves, by the way.
Oh, yes. I'm sure. Just great.
Right. And so we do see people are being treated for medical stuff and talking about the Prime.
Yeah, so it's our new cadets, and they're just, they're loving it. They're talking about the fact that Optimus just jumped into action, which especially people who don't know Optimus are very taken with the fact that he is a cat and he leaps from high places.
That is what he does. And Midnight Express is even saying, like, oh, man, I can't believe we actually get to be around a Prime. And the Velocitronian is saying, our colony is all about speed, and he's super fast even for being a truck. And, you know. And I love that Aileron is like, are these guys, was I like this? And
was I this bad?
Jetfire's like, yeah, you were way this bad.
You were totally this bad. He just laughs right in her face. Yeah, but they're all very starstruck. It's all still very surreal to all the cadets. And at least, but you know what? And Aileron, she accepts it. She's like, okay, fine. You're right. You're right. I had a little, you know, I was a little starstruck at first. But then she does, she kind of asks Jetfire. She's like, you knew him before. Was this always the deal? Like, what? She wants to know if he was always like this, and Jetfire doesn't know what she means.
Right.
And then she says, I don't know, like he is. Thank you. Which, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I've said that before. I don't know,
right,
like
you're
he
just
is.
Like, you know, the general, just him, like that.
And Jetfire's like, no, he's been acting weird lately. He's ever since this deity stuff, space messiah is the phrase that gets used, has started to come around. And speaking of that, we have Pura Magna, which she's cool because she's like, hey, he sucks and we should have the Matrix.
she is not shy about letting it be known that, yeah, she's like, right, Torchbearer's pretty great.
Right. And
we should definitely have the Matrix. But she's come to see Jetfire because she's like, we found something.
Yes.
Doc has something to show you.
There's a big old spaceship out there.
Yep, something's coming in. It's coming towards Earth, and it's probably trouble.
And I will say, these two panels down here are especially the ones where I was like, wow, this almost feels like Kirby art. But because the coloring paints them both in the same light, I'm like, I have no idea who these two bots are, even though I just saw them in the last panel.
Right. Luckily, because Pyra is sharper, right. So yes, I was like, that's her. But it's really, great. The way she shaded it and then the way he added the colors, very good.
Yeah.
It gives a good atmosphere. I like it specifically here for a reason that comes up later, because they're like, okay, we got a ship coming in. And Jetfire's like, well, let's wait to tell Optimus. Like, he's in the middle of something. We're not going to tell him right now. And Pyra Magna's like, yeah, I guess we wouldn't want to call him into action while he's negotiating with humans. And so that's funny for a reason in a little bit. And we see, oh, Optimus Prime is meeting with Madam President, Oscar winner, Viola Davis.
And, of course, we do remember being over Washington, D.C. They love it.
Yes.
And she's like, hey, stop doing that.
What the hell is your problem, Prime? We've talked about this.
And he's like, well, we're all friends here, right? And she's like, you set a schedule. You call us and you are invited.
God, man. He still doesn't get Earth culture. Like, he just doesn't. Right. He hasn't gotten it yet.
He is invading sovereign territory quite a bit.
just marching right in there. And or leaping right in. He's
right. Yes, exactly. And he even says, well, we worked together on repelling the extra dimensional threat. I thought we have an open door policy by this time. And she's like, you were the extra dimensional threat. You, our Cybertronians, caused this. So
you guys introed all of that shit to Earth. Right. So yeah, she's over it.
And he's like, anyway, I really wanted to talk because some people got this crazy idea that I want to control Earth. And she's like, yeah, that's me who has the crazy idea.
I've been saying it constantly. And he's like, no, I just want to protect you guys.
And she rightfully says, like, well, what you've done is commission us into an organization we have no interest or say in. And colonized us, essentially. So, and he's saying, like, look, That's the only thing that's going to keep you alive, and you really need to work on picking a representative. And she's saying, there will not be a representative. We don't know who the other members of this group are. We haven't met them. We don't want to be in a group with them. And also, by the way, I only lead America.
Right. Which, I remember even thinking that, like, I'm glad that came up, because I was like, Optimus really thinks
this is the world.
Right. He's like, well, I just go to her, right? But he does. He's essentially saying she has influence, so she could help the rest of the world. Because, yeah, she's saying, listen, planet Earth doesn't even get along with itself. And now you want us to get along with another planet and a bunch of colonies. And he does kind of, as he's making this argument with her, or making this argument to her on why they should colonize, now he has a new reason, which is the fact that Earth is littered with Cybertronian technology, which is a breach of the Tyrest Accord.
Right.
So he's essentially saying, if you were a colony, though, you would be part of Cybertron, and therefore this would not be a violation.
Right. He's saying, like, look, I'm just trying to cover my bases. And Viola Davis is saying, like, hey, I didn't sign any Tyrest Accord. This sounds like a you problem. And also, we're not giving it back.
Yes. So they're still at odds here. And then we have Soundwave.
Yes.
Sweet boy, speak up. And he apologizes for interrupting, but he's picked up a large spacecraft. So immediately I was like, okay, this is why it was adorable to me. I was like, okay, Jetfire, you really thought Doc caught something that Soundwave didn't? Because, you know, Soundwave, he doesn't play. Like, and he will go ahead and interrupt Prime's meeting with the president herself. He doesn't give a shit. And he knows how to do this. He was third to Megatron. So, you know, he's played this game before. So I just, right. I thought that was a little, I don't know if it was done with that intention, but to me that was
I like
kind
it.
Of a good show that, yeah, like, no, Soundwave, he doesn't play. He's here for it. But yeah, so he's letting Optimus know.
Right. He's saying this is going to land in the Alps and we should figure out what it is. And yes. Optimus says, well, I need to ask permission, I guess, Madam President.
Can I please go deal with this threat to Earth?
And so we cut away back to before the war and the Techniversity of Ultrex, Iacon.
Where a bunch of smart people live.
Presumably. Yeah, presumably.
And they've taken Hefter's body to, because Optimus, like his narration, he's talking about the only people he could trust forever and always, amen, are his friends. And so, of course, we know who we're going to be seeing here.
Yeah.
They've taken Hefter's body, and he's taken it to Ratchet.
The good old doctor.
Good old doctor. We love
and
him.
He's saying, hey, by the way, everybody's lied to you, Orion. these are exit wounds, and the police straight up murdered this dude in cold blood.
Yeah, this guy was definitely murdered.
And Optimus is saying, but that would mean that they were corrupt, and that doesn't make any sense at all.
I do love it, because Optimus, yeah, he says, why would the police lie, Ratchet? And Ratchet's response is, seriously?
Exactly.
Ratchet also does not play. Ratchet and Soundwave, they're not here for your shit.
Ratchet, I've never felt closer to you than this moment.
He's great. I love Ratchet. I'm so glad.
And my favorite line of the issue, Orion says, I'm not naive.
Oh, honey. He just thought Zeta, things would be better.
And he seemed like a really nice guy.
That guy who tells me not to call him anymore, he seemed really sweet. And like he wasn't going to be a jerk to everybody.
Yeah,
oh,
guess
doll
what?
Baby. No.
He says, things are better, aren't they? and, you know.
And Ratchet's like, I mean, sort of, but not entirely, because, like, those dudes were shitty out in the open.
Right.
Now we have
people
being shitty.
We could at least recognize it, and there was no deniability.
Right. Like, now everything's, like, under the surface. Now it's behind closed doors that people are being secretly shitty about everything. And I do like it because Orion says, oh, because Ratchet says, we're fanning the flames of a war. And Orion responds, so I've heard, to which Ratchet says, you hear if we're on the right side? Which, ooh.
Think about that. Think about Decepticon Ratchet. That's a cool idea.
It is a very cool idea. And knowing Ratchet, because it's one of those things that I think people like to think, well, as soon as this person becomes Autobot or Decepticon, it changes who they are entirely. But no, no. It's just straight up still Ratchet. He's just a Decepticon. Like, it's just the same dude. And same with anybody. They would still be the same person. They would just be on the other side. And yeah.
Which,
Ratchet,
like,
Decepticon would be great.
And I understand there is other material in Transformers besides what we have read. But now I'm wondering, like, why is Ratchet a Autobot? Like, what is it? Is it just because of Optimus? Like, there's questions I have now.
Right. And obviously, the comics have the liberty of going and hopping
making
around the
assumptions
and being like,
and...
yes, and being like, well, here was pre-war, and here was what he was thinking, which we just can't get from a lot of the other media. The, you know, the shows and everything like that. But yeah, so specifically comic verse Ratchet and what we have seen of him, if I had to make a guess, I would say Optimus was certainly a big part of it. And you know, he calls it like it is. So if there were, I'm sure there were aspects of, you know, the more violent the Decepticon kind of uprising became, it was probably,
sure,
I don't know,
yeah.
But I do think it probably wasn't an easy, or like, you know, just a like, well, no question about it, I'm just going to join up with the Autobots. I definitely do think I could see Ratchet being not completely certain of his decision.
And so this is something that I don't know that I've ever directly discussed. We've probably talked around it a lot of times. I don't, like, we've seen the foundings of the Decepticons. We've seen how the Decepticons started. I don't really know how the Autobots started, like, or what the Autobots stand for. I guess we've seen Optimus in his Senate speech saying, like, I'm proud to say I'm an Autobot.
That was, so that was him kind of claiming the name.
Right.
As far as this has all been decided. Because again, and then sometimes these, you know, the histories of them are written or retconned in, you know, issues and whatnot. But I do know the Autobots themselves were, like, at the start, the core of it was the military. So it was like kind of like the response, the military responding to the Decepticon uprising. And then when everything just started falling apart and falling apart and falling, you know, and cities are falling and then the Senate's falling. And so I think it was then kind of members of the military banding together. And that also, at least that's my understanding. And again, I never remember exactly where anything is or if things have been.
Sure, absolutely. That's so interesting to me, and I feel like we're totally derailing, but also on some level, this is like what the show exists for.
Right. I hope people are here for this.
Yes.
Sorry if you're not.
We will get back to the comic, I promise.
We will.
But, like, I feel like that means the Autobots don't really mean anything. And this is obviously stuff we should have talked about maybe in the first 5 episodes of this show, not the 63rd, but you know what I mean.
Well, and that's where it's interesting. And this is actually kind of a narrative that's been, actually, it just came up in the last show that we did regarding Chaos Theory. And it's something that, to take us even further off track, I remember thinking, like, that was my argument even back, way back with Gen 1, like, campy 80s cartoon.
Right.
I remember my argument being here, like, and I know it's not this cut and dry, but the rest of the cartoon is very cut and dry, so, but I remember thinking, as far as you can tell, like, yes, Megatron is a tyrant. Yes, Megatron is trying to forcibly make things happen. But what's Optimus doing?
Right.
He's just waiting to respond to Megatron. Like, Megatron, in some capacity, is trying to
accomplish something.
Steal from Earth to revitalize Cybertron. But what's Optimus doing besides responding to him? And they said that in Chaos Theory, too.
Right,
Megatron,
exactly. Yeah.
He calls out Optimus on just responding to him.
And
that's been a big question
absolutely
to me for a long time.
Right, and I think that's why we see so much of Optimus saying, like, don't you just wish the war was over? Because, like, Megatron has a clear goal and something he wants to accomplish, whereas it feels like Optimus just wants the war to be over.
Right. And that's where I will, like, don't worry, everybody, I'm still going to give Optimus his credit, because we do know, at least in most stories, like in most continuities, Optimus doesn't want to be Prime. He didn't ask for this. He didn't want it. He did not seek it out. He would not have chosen it for himself. unless there was no better option for everyone. So that's where I do give him some slack, where I'm like, he didn't want this in the first place. I get it. Don't worry, babe. I got you.
But he's then tired.
Right. So I feel like that kind of goes hand in hand. Yeah, he does want the war to be over because he didn't ask for this in the first place. He wants it to be peaceful. He and Megatron do, especially, you know, Megatron of now, and like when everything gets laid out, if you look at the start of everything and where Megatron has come back around to, they want the same thing. And it's, which we got, essentially, in a way, the war did end, obviously. That's what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with how you live with yourself after 4 million years of war.
And it's so interesting that we talk about this, because now I want to actually go back and read, like, those first couple issues of R.I.D. Right? And be like, wasn't he just, like, bumming around a bar for a while with, like, an orc guy and a little rhymey boy?
Because they, the non-aligned wanted him out. So he was like, cool, then I'm just gonna go. So he did. He peaced out. So he literally did. We're like, Megatron, of course, we know was, like, in the wilds, like, being half-dead and stuff like that. No, Optimus really was just
He was like,
okay,
I'm going to take a vacation.
I'm gone. If you don't want me here, bye. Which I remember when those issues did first come out, and I actually even probably said this on the show when we were doing those. It was a million years ago. But yeah, I was always like, Optimus and Megatron probably just met up somewhere. And we're like, ooh, we did it. We made it out alive.
Great job.
Good work. Let's go get a condo.
All right, we can get back to the comic now.
We'll get back to so that was all started from the fact that Ratchet questioned whether or not Autobot was the
right
position, or at
why
least
not hear
the
these Decepticon guys out.
Yes.
And so we kind of gloss over that, and Ratchet says, you know, these Decepticons, all they want is to liberate people from their alt modes. And look at my grad student here. He's a jet, but he wants to be a scientist.
Aw, so sweet. And he's kind of talking about how much effort he had to go through to kind of help Jetfire get into this. And, you know, and of course we've seen that this occasionally happens. Whirl had, you know, was able to get out of what he was designed
to do. Out of being a helicopter.
Yeah. And so here we have Jetfire getting out of being just transpo, essentially. Right. And yeah, he's a scientist. And of course, Jetfire, they catch his attention, and he turns and he looks, and he just mutters, a cop. And he
that Autobot cop. he shouts at him and starts slugging.
He jumps at him. Optimus immediately puts him down.
Yeah.
Or Ryan, pardon me.
Please now. And Raj is like, what the hell is this about? And we see Jetfire has a Decepticon brand on him.
Which, my note here just says, this is fun. Thanks, John. Because this is very fun. I have a little... Yeah, so we reveal, okay, Jetfire sympathizes with the Decepticons, which makes sense in the political climate that we have established on Cybertron at this time, and the position that he is in, that he is a scientist when he is also a jet. So this is really, really fun, though, because when we first meet Jetfire back in Gen 1, back to the cartoon, we're going back to it. I'm sorry, I'm derailing us again. Jetfire, when he shows up, his name is Skyfire, which is why sometimes I will call him that. And I I do my best to call him Jetfire because I know it gets confusing. But back in the G1 cartoon, when he shows up, we discover that he and Starscream used to be lab partners. So they were both scientists. And then they were like out cruising the galaxy or universe or whatever, because it was much easier back in the 80s when you were just a little cartoon. And Jetfire essentially gets lost on Earth. And so, wouldn't you know it, millions of years later, when the Decepticons happen to be stuck on Earth or living on Earth, they are in one of the North or South Pole. But Icy just, yeah, so in their, I forget, they're trying to steal some Energon in some way, I don't know. And
or 13.
In the ice, you know. And they find a robot, and oh my god, it's Skyfire. And so they thaw him out, and Starscream's so excited. Or, like, Starscream's like, this is my guy.
This
I know this
buddy.
Guy. Yeah. And if you're like me, you're like, they were definitely dating. Come on.
They were so very close roommates.
You know, partners in the lab, partners in life. And so they thaw him out. And so, of course, immediately, you know, Starscream's like, hey, here's the deal. It's millions of years later. I found you. And we're Decepticons now. You're a Decepticon. You're on my team. And Skyfire, of course, is like, okay, great. I'm so glad you found me. This is weird. This is great. And then, of course, something happens with the Autobots. And, like, he sees how awful the Decepticons are treating the Autobots. And Jetfire's like, what? No, I don't want to. This is mean. I don't want to be mean to these guys. I don't want to shoot
these
people.
I like being nice.
Yeah, he's like, I'm a pacifist. I don't want to do this. So, of course, ultimately, he ends up joining the Autobots, which, you know, there's now, and I was just like, that means there's so much angsty tension between the two.
Naturally.
Starscream and Jetfire.
It's fertile fanfic territory.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah, everybody knows it. So... But yeah, so there you go. Skyfire, Jetfire was initially a Decepticon. So I love that that was tucked in here, that we have Decepticon Jetfire here. Thank
I'll
you.
Take
That's
it.
That's why, yeah. So there you go. A little tidbit.
Exactly the kind of background this show exists for.
Yeah.
I love it. And so we go to the Matterhorn.
Yes. So we hop back to present day Earth.
We get a pretty cool shot of just all these bots standing on them. It looks kind of album covery.
It does. Yeah. They're all just hanging out. We can see the torchbearers are here.
Yeah.
Optimus Prime, of course, at the top.
RC's naturally.
Looking the other direction.
Doing a sort of Captain Morgan over there. Aileron barely hanging on.
She's like, okay, this looks great. Can we just take the picture, please? And, but yeah, they're waiting for this ship.
Yeah, whatever this thing is. And then all of a sudden, Prime is like, oh, hey, this old thing? And whips out the Matrix of Leadership.
Right, the half of it that still exists.
Right, yeah, got split.
Right. And Rod broke his half because it's Rod. What did everybody expect?
And he's just showing it off to Aileron. Like, it's nothing. Just the Matrix of Leadership. Whoa, what's happening to it? And it starts
and it's
erupting
going.
In light.
It's lighting our darkest hour.
Yes, and even Pyrrha must admit, this is pretty rad. And Optimus is saying, I don't know what's going on with it.
It shouldn't be working. And they do say, we've seen this happen before. It happened on Kaminis, which is true because it was glowing in his chest and we all went, wait a minute, that's just broken. That shouldn't be happening.
And they say it's a holy image and that the Matrix lives. And Optimus is saying, I don't understand. I'm gonna do this every time. And Pyrrha Magna is saying,
ready,
well, yeah, because you don't deserve to have the Matrix, you stupid idiot. Give it here.
Yeah, she calls him out.
She says, you're consumed by the light. And the Matrix must be wielded by one who can control the flame.
Yes. So essentially, he's caught up in it. He's caught up in the power of the Matrix, whereas somebody with more control, a.k.a. her...
Again, how lucky are we that we just went back into Chaos Theory and that whole second issue was like Optimus saying, I don't know if I can trust myself with the Matrix.
Exactly. Like, what great timing. Thanks, Or. I appreciate it. Good suggestion. But yeah, so it is good timing. And right, Optimus didn't ask for this.
He said
melded with him.
It hurt when he took it on, and he kept saying like the reason that he gave it up in that issue and then eventually took it back is because like he was relying on it too much. And she's saying, you let the flame control you. The true Prime controls the flame.
Which, oof, nice. I like that line.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in Optimus's narration, he says she thinks she should hold the Matrix. And then he follows it up by saying, I'm not sure she's wrong. So even he admits, like, he realizes that, like, she could be a better holder of this than me. Which I think is good. That's good to be aware. Prime, thanks.
And
but
she is punching the ground during all of this, which seems odd until we find out that there's Or 13, and that's what the Matrix is reacting to.
She's like, this is all it is, dummy.
Stupid Jeez. Idiot moron. Why don't you learn to use that thing?
God, it's like hand it here or read the instructions.
It's like when your friend gets a new iPhone and you're like, you don't even know how to use it.
You and I treat our friends with new iPhones very differently.
Well, like when your mom gets a new phone, then. Let's say that. Something like that.
I feel like... Anyway.
Right. Whatever. I get jealous. Whatever. And so she's saying, you know, you've brought so much to Earth and now more is coming. And hey, there's a giant ship, except that they're saying it doesn't look very big.
Yeah. Which, okay, if you guys just read this line out of context, it's just Optimus saying it looks less massive than you'd implied, Soundwave. And I'm sorry, I had to
Optimus, it's not the size, it's how you use it.
I'm sorry, everybody.
That's yeah, usually my really job. And Optimus is saying, like, maybe we're lucky. Maybe it's just a small thing we don't have to worry about. But it's not. It's a giant thing that blows up half the Matterhorn.
Right. It just pummels right into the Earth. And it probably looks familiar to people who know other continuities. It looks like a Quintesson ship is
I believe
what we're getting
you.
At here. Yeah. Hopefully we'll get into those eventually. But yeah, that's an Optimus is like, well, great.
It's a busy book for a number one there.
There's
a lot of stuff dropped there.
A lot of stuff dropped, a lot of stuff established, which of course is what it's here for.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
Let's luckily, hop right into number two.
Yeah, let's find out who's on this ship.
It's a pretty cool surprise.
It is a pretty cool surprise.
We don't need the recap page because we were just there.
We were just there. We just recapped it for you by talking about it.
And this huge, huge ship is here, and Optimus is saying, like, hey, Pure Magna, you can do that thing, right? You know, with the other robots. What's that called?
That thing.
The Victorion. That's it, right?
That's the one.
Do that.
and they do.
She says, so says the Prime, which I love. Kind of like deadpanning and like, yeah, whatever.
She's like, uh-huh, we just established you're a putz. Great. I will totally go combine with my ladies.
And Arcee is like, hey, that's pretty cool, but this thing is still enormous.
Yeah, like, nice try, but I don't know if she's going to do much.
Right.
In regards to this huge ship that's just landed.
And Optimus says, just be ready for anything. And I cannot tell you how excited I was to see these two bots hop out. Because I totally, totally recognize Skids and Mudflap from the second Transformers Bay film.
I was wondering where you were going. Like, what did you... Where are you taking this? Wonderful. Great job.
My two favorites...
When I saw these bots hop out, I literally said, oh, fuck me, out loud. So that was my reaction. I'm glad to see we had similar reactions.
On the same wavelength there. No, I didn't know who these guys are. I thought they looked cool.
Certainly.
I like that they appear to just be mishmashes of various robot parts.
Hell yeah. They're
like,
great.
Hasbro was like, we have a bunch of parts we could just jam together. Do we want to just try that? They're like, yeah, okay, this guy's name is Wreck-Gar now.
It's Wreck-Gar. He is from Junkion.
Yeah. Along with Rum-Edge.
Yeah, Rum-Edge and Wreck-Gar. And together there will be peace. This is how they intro themselves. They look great. To set some more, just something to
yeah, who are
give
these
everybody
guys?
Here. So the Junkions are introduced in the 1986 movie. And so in case you were reading this book and you didn't quite know how to hear Wreck-Gar, here's some help, which I was having a lot of fun because I knew exactly how to hear him. He's voiced by Eric Idle in the movie.
Oh, really?
So, yes.
All right. I'll take that.
So it's great. And then a fun little bonus in Transformers Animated, Wreck-Gar shows up and he is voiced by Weird Al Yankovic in that. So
that's even just, better. See,
right?
I was
so
going
some context
like,
for everybody.
Totally the other direction. I saw, I guess, the facial hair and the eyes and, like, the face shape. And I thought he sounds like Lobo, like a gruff biker type guy.
Well, and that's, I'm glad you said that because this version of him, this, like, IDW version of Wreck-Gar totally throws me off. Because he doesn't usually look this menacing. Like,
sure.
You know?
Not like, even, he still looks goofy, but he definitely looks like a tough guy.
Yes. So if you, and maybe, yeah, we can look at, if, maybe in alt mode, we'll look at past other iterations. Versions of Rekkar, and I'll be like, it. Yeah, like, look at him here. Also a magic Eric Idle. So, yeah, so he is, at least usually, he's, yes, almost lighthearted and funny and goofy and just, so that's when he just, because he rambles a lot, and you see it in these books, and it's going to be interesting trying to be like, here's what he's getting at here.
He even kind of, like, Deadpools in the thing here and says, read my identification caption, which he does not have one. right. But it says, it says Rekkar, ex-citizen of the X-Planet Junkion. And Rummaj seems to be a little more straight-laced.
Yes. Kind of like, yeah, the straight man here, too. To Rekkar. But, so yes, I was very excited to see Rekkar show up. And also a little worried to see Rekkar show up. But we love him. He's great. But yes, so there's your background. There's your something to hold on to when you're thinking of Rekkar. And yeah, they climb off this ship. And they want to know, who are you guys? What's up?
Yeah.
How's it going?
Optimus says, I'm Optimus Prime. I greet you on behalf of Earth. And... who are you?
And immediately Rekkar doesn't give a shit because he's a combiner, and that's where his attention
he's
is.
He's like, ooh, Israel big.
Look at this one.
Giant woman.
All you want to do is see her turn into a giant woman. And Optimus is like, pardon me, but who the hell are you people? What is this? What's happening? Why did you come here?
And they say, hey, we heard there was Or 13. And they're like, didn't we just find Or 13? But yeah.
Which makes sense. So we do know, obviously, that was what all of Revolution was built upon. So
right.
These guys got are here a little late to the party. But yeah, so they're saying they need some Or 13.
We need energy. And Rekkar's head kind of comes in from off panel.
Yeah, he's like, it's off of his body. He's like holding it.
He's just parts. And like, even in that next panel down, we see him like reconnecting his head by wires and stuff. What a fun character.
Yes, he's out of control. And yeah, there's just something about junk and junkers and junkions that just brings out the best in these characters. They're all great. More trash people, please. And Optimus is saying, like, and he mentions that he recognizes the starship design again, Quintesson ship. But he doesn't know them. And Soundwave is saying, no, I know who these people are. But Rekkar continues to do whatever he talks a lot. I'm sorry,
right.
Everybody.
He's definitely doing his bit here.
Yes.
He's explaining, like, what happened to their world. And their world basically ran out of energon and then kind of got destroyed.
Yes.
And he says they became the metaphor for a late-stage empire, which is a funny thing to say. And they used space junk to rebuild their lives. They're the Junkers. We have Junkrat and Roadhog here.
Yeah, I love it. I'm so excited. Trash for everyone. Forever
right.
And ever. Amen.
You say we can all be trash. Isn't it lovely?
Yeah, they're all going to live forever.
And he's saying, let's make a deal. We'll take that Or 13 and we'll give you all the cool things we have.
Yeah. And Rummaj is even saying that they seek to build a new Cybertron.
Right.
That is what they are after.
It's a lofty goal.
A very lofty goal. But for what it's worth, the scene on Junkion in the movie ends with a big dance party to Weird Al, which they know.
Perfect.
So you know what? If that's what they're going to... if that's their Cybertron, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm down.
I'm way more interested than any other utopia we've seen so far. And Optimus says, like, that's nice of you to offer, but...
Right, it's like, oh, I don't think you have anything we want,
yeah.
But I don't want to say that directly, so,
He invokes the Tyrest Accord, and he's like, well, I don't think Earth can really take any of your technology. And
yeah.
Rummaj immediately calls his bluff, and they're like, oh, so you speak for Earth, then?
She's on her toes, and he's like, our relationship status on Facebook is complicated. And, oh, don't worry. We have some other people here to weigh in on Optimus's relationship to Earth.
Remember this guy?
Were you missing all of the humans?
I was just thinking the other day, where are all those great human characters that I love in these books so much?
Where are they? Where are they with their endless action sequences?
I was interested in seeing Zilong because, like, I didn't read most of Revolution, so if he was in it, I didn't see him.
Oh, right. I forget you didn't read Revolution.
But we get quite a bit of voiceover from him, and he's just, these guys are all like G.I. Joe now.
Yeah.
It's like a half G.I. Joe, half.
Right. So the humans that we know before, cause yeah, we have, Zilong here, Sanjay is here.
Right.
And Spike, and they are now all part.
They all get code names if they didn't have one, which is just to say Sanjay is now named High Tech.
Which I'm like, oh, but I like the name Sanjay.
Yeah. Barwani, you know, sounds fun to say.
Barwani is so fun to say. I was excited to see Flint. I like Flint a whole lot.
Sure.
As somebody who only watched Gen 1 G.I. Joe, I like Flint. That guy's cool.
His name is Dashiell Fairborn, which is spelled different from Marissa Fairborn, but is there a connection there?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
So Marissa is... depending on the continuity, but yes, she is his daughter.
Oh, weird. Cool.
Like, because Marissa, this is not her first appearance, of course. So she's existed in this Hasbro universe before. And so she is the daughter of Flint and Lady J.
Oh, rad.
And yeah, so very cool. And of course, then I was like, where's Lady J? Is she here? Are they her parents? Is this what's going on?
Right. Whether or not that's the case in this continuity, that's still cool to know. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So yeah.
I'm glad I caught enough to just pick up on that.
Yeah, I'm glad you called it out, because I was going to if you hadn't. So, well done.
But yes, all of the EDC has kind of been rolled into G.I. Joe, as we realized here. Talon, Zilong, is telling us about some stuff that happened to him.
Yeah, he's the one narrating this one.
Yes, which is an interesting, like, story voiceover, talking about when Cybertronians arrived in Beijing.
Yes, so these are back to the events of All Hail Megatron.
And this, it's going to be weird to talk about. It's easy, it, like, tracks in text, but, like, we're going to be flipping between the story of, like,
yes,
his voiceover and what's actually happening on the page a couple times, so bear with us here.
Yeah, it'll get a little confusing. Sorry. But of course, Rekkar is just, he's enchanted by them.
Right, he's like, look at how cute they are.
Look at these little gross things. What are they? How long do they live? Can I have one?
It's a banana, Michael. What could it cost? $10?
Exactly.
You say, how long do they live? 1,000 years? 500?
500? What is it? And he quotes Symphanius of... He says Auduria, but I think it might be Arduria. Like, if we remember way back, the planet that Shockwave froze over, the Arduria.
Oh!
You guys remember? Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. The, like, bird people, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's, I mean, it's at least a very close name, if it's not that species. I just thought that was a neat little callback.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take that.
Yeah. Because then he does say, before Cybertronians annihilated her planet.
Which we do remember happening, yeah.
That certainly happened. He's grabbing onto the helicopter. And he's
right.
Like, look at you guys. I want to play with this.
Which, I mean, so this has got to be, like, one of his first times seeing a vehicle that doesn't transform. So is he just, like, grabbing a dude's shoulder right now? I don't know. Right. He probably knows they're not actually robots, but whatever. It's funny to think about.
It is funny to think about. And of course, Optimus is like, don't you put that down right now.
Yeah. He's like, hey, I have to protect Earth.
Yeah, stop that. That's not why we're here. And they fire, the humans fire at Rekkar, and he just blows up.
Right.
He just
falls to pieces. Himself. Yeah, we even do see a big, like, rip tire up
his
in front
tire
of him.
Looks like a rip tire. I'm telling you guys, it's great. We're getting Talon's narration, where he's kind of setting the scene of, like, he had this neighbor who would yell at him and yell at his dog. And
right,
she was
a sort of mean old lady, and the Cybertronian blast didn't hit her, he says. It was just a near miss, but her leg caught fire from it.
Yes.
And she would live, but she would never be able to walk again. And he says that that's a metaphor for Earth, that it was clear that Earth would survive, but this would always be, like, what Earth is from now on.
Right. Like, Earth has now been caught in the blast.
It is a Cybertronian war zone.
Yes. And he's saying that even though this lady had always been nasty to him, his reaction was to help her. And that's how he feels about that. Since Earth is the metaphor, or that's the metaphor now for Earth, that's how he feels and why he's in now G.I. Joe as well.
Yes.
Is because as much as these people who he used to be against, or at least used to not work with, have kind of screwed him over, or he feels like they've... Because he talks about the Plamp and how they had such a good army in China and all that kind of went to hell because of, you know, just all the sequences of events that have happened. So, and now instead of having Plamp, he's part of G.I. Joe. But it's because, yeah, Earth is like that lady. And no, he's not thrilled about it, but he's got to help. That's just what he's going to do.
That's a good
so that's what the narration is telling us.
And so we do see Rekkar is not particularly ruined by any of this.
Yes.
And he's kind of laughing.
And he's got this huge, like, other Junkion doctor putting him back together.
What a cool look for this Junkion doctor.
So cool. He's massive. He is like Roadhog. But, yes, so he's being put back together. And, of course, the Joes and the Cybertronians who have been here are kind of arguing over, they're saying, hey, the Junkions just landed. They're an alien race. You don't speak for Earth. We are the ones who should be addressing the Junkions.
This is our
not
job.
The Cybertronians.
And
yes.
Optimus saying, this is our home, G-Long. And like, no, it's not. Cybertron is. This is Earth.
Optimus, honey, you can't just... Optimus is that guy who's like, hey, can I crash at your place for a month? And then he's there for like half a year later and you're like, dude.
He's like, I have rights. The Junkions are like, Rumadge is like, let's get out of here. Let's reconvene elsewhere. We'll be in touch, Optimus. And then we cut back to 4 million years ago.
Yeah, and now we have Orion bringing in Skyfire, who tried to assault him.
Yes, and...
But he's not taking him to the police station.
The mutatus mutandis.
Yes, I looked up what that meant, and I don't remember now.
Perfect. I'll take
Sorry, everybody.
Don't worry. Someone really cool is here who's probably knows exactly what it means, because he knows everything.
We're going to go see Perm's other dear friend, Prowl.
Been too long.
Oh, my goodness. But we can see they aren't dear friends at this point because Prowl is saying he remembers Orion from the Senator Momus investigation, which is true. That's the Shadow Play arc.
Yes.
And he guesses that Orion's name is Omicron. Wait, how do you...
Omicron Noble.
That's a great name. But yes, of course.
That's his screen name.
I'm just like, what? No, that's
he's like,
not
please
me.
Call me Orion Pax.
Noble is my maiden name. but then Jetfire is saying he knows Prowl, though, and he is disgusted by Prowl because he served Sentinel Prime.
And Optimus is saying, like, yeah, dude, that's why I trust him. strike number one, Optimus.
I knew this was going to be a fun part to discuss.
I'm sorry, everybody. I'm not letting up.
it's going to just keep going. But, of course, Prowl is, he's saying, I know why you're here, the Decepticon that everybody keeps talking about who got killed. But he's also now setting the scene for us that, like, he does... statistics now.
Yes, this is sort of what has happened after Shadow Play.
Yes.
He's a planning guy and not a street cop. What interest do I have in police killing a Decepticon in self-defense?
And Optimus says the best line in this whole thing to me, which is Sentinel Prime was the worst. Like, we could just leave it there.
That is a real... it's fun that Optimus put it that way.
It is. But yeah, he's saying that's why Megatron killed him. And, like, great job, Decepticons. And
Is this Optimus saying this, or is this...
Oh, God, no, it's not. Sorry, this is where, like, the colors were throwing me off.
Right,
like,
no, I totally see. No. Especially because they kind of have the same, like, head pipes.
Yeah, it's the way, it's Skyfire saying this. It's Jetfire saying this. Oh, my God, I'm the worst. I'm so sorry, everybody. It's Jetfire saying this, and he's turned in such a way that you're correct. It's Jetfire saying, Sentinel Prime was the worst. Megatron killed him. Decepticons are doing what needs to be done.
Right.
And...
And you're looking to kill me the same way you killed Hefter. And I believe this is Optimus.
Yes.
And he says, how theoretical are the statistics of what happens to Decepticons under police custody? One's convicted of no crime. And Prowl's like, yeah, I don't care. Let Decepticons die.
Oh, my goodness. But Optimus is essentially saying, he counters, you know, this brush off by Prowl by saying... You believe police should be held to a higher degree of scrutiny, and that Prowl believes the system is corrupt, and that's why he came here. And then, of course, Prowl immediately is like, no, I don't believe anything. I just know facts. But then he does go on to say, in Prowl's defense, and I want to put this out here, because I had this, I was wondering this while I was reading this section in particular. I really do wonder how much of it comes down to tonality, because... Like, what kind of voice you're giving somebody. Because, of course, in text, you can't sure. hear them. You can't hear, you know, what kind of inflections they're giving and what... Yeah, so to me, I can read this Prowl as the Prowl I've known prior to the Prowl that we have now. I can still read this as a Prowl who's just kind of... He's scared and doesn't want to show it, but, like, and certainly would never let anybody know it. And he's better at bullshitting than, you know what I mean? Like, he's good sure. at posturing, and he's good at... And we saw that in Shadowplay, even with him and Chrome Dome. Like, when he got caught in a gunfight, Chrome Dome was like, oh, my God, this... Yeah, no. He's terrified because he's never been in this situation before. But Prowl wasn't going to put it that way. So I think that's where I can still look at this Prowl and not be like, he's not trying to be a... Dick, per se, he's just not great at showing any weakness or showing any indecisiveness. I don't know.
You seem to already have a pretty good idea of how I read this.
Of course I do.
Which is, it sounds like a bunch of hypocritical shit. Him saying that the system's corrupt, we need to watch over those with power. Buddy, let's go talk about you. I need to tell you about the future.
Well, and see, and that's where I think I can also step back, because I'm with you. Like, Prowl of now, honey. Like, as, you know, like...
Prowl
know
of, like, since I started reading, because the first stuff that came to mind was, like, the moment we meet him, and he's like, I hate these nails who are Decepticon sympathizers, and we should just round them all up and kill them. Like, and, Jesus.
And you're totally right in that. Sorry, when I say Prowl of now, I am thinking
right,
of,
right,
like,
right. Yes,
this IDW, like, here we are in the IDW arc, in this, you know, this continuity that we are in currently. Because he hasn't always been this way. So I think that's where I can go back and be like, well, yeah, as of late, he's gotten worse and worse and worse, and he's let things affect him negatively and make him worse and worse and worse. I totally agree on that. So anyway, yes, that's where, to me, I'm like, well, once upon a time, though, I feel like he did, you know, he wasn't...
Sure.
He's very much like Megatron. He became the thing that he was essentially, like, he became the almost cartoon villain version of himself, of what he was trying to do. I don't know, at least
that's... No, I understand what you're saying.
Okay, so anyway, so that's just where I had that thought while I was reading this. I was like, if you can step back and read it from a tone of a pre-war Prowl who wanted to abandon Cybertron if a war started. You know what I mean? Like, that's
sure.
where I tried to be mindful of this. But anyway, we'll continue.
I'm willing to accept and even assume that in some timelines and universes... There exist Prowls that do not immediately upset me.
Hopefully we'll meet at least one.
Someday.
It's not going to happen anytime someday. Soon. Yeah, I can say that much.
Excellent.
We already alluded to reading Wreckers, and who people were right to be like, oh, geez, Greg reading Wreckers. I'm like, I know. It'll be fine.
People seem very interested in that one. I'm wondering exactly what is going to happen. That's going
He's
to make me dislike
real.
Make me like him even less.
It's going to be real. If you guys show up for only one show, come back for whatever shows we do about the Wreckers. Anyway, yes. Right. He also tells Optimus to go back to playing Hero Cop. Everybody wants to brush off Optimus.
Everybody wants. It's like they all agreed. They had a meeting and they're like, we call him Hero Cop, right?
That's what we've decided. They have posters around with the Hero Cop written underneath.
Maybe it's written on his back and we just don't see it.
We just don't see it. I bet you're right.
That would make sense.
But yeah, Prowl's like, go sit on Zeta's lap. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, and Optimus says, like, I'm not going to go until I know the facts. And Prowl is like, oh, well, okay, I guess that sways me then.
he goes along with it. And Optimus is like, oh. Or Orion's like, are you going to help me? And yeah, he's in. Because he warns Orion that what they're about to do, looking into this, is not going to make Orion popular.
Right.
And
it does seem like he's questioning, like, is Orion being a good guy for glory, or is he doing it because it's the right thing to do? And with that question, it seems like Optimus has confirmed, okay, I believe that he's trying to actually do good work here.
Right. And so, yeah, Prowl's in, because he's already unpopular. And I was like, Greg would probably agree with you there.
Yeah. It sucks that he says a true thing, but in a, like, I'm a cool guy way.
I know. That was
I'm a lone wolf who does not take, who doesn't, I don't need the approval of others to accomplish my goals.
Yeah, that was the moment where I was like, damn it, Prowl. So, yeah, John and Kay kind of shot my theory a little bit, but I still stand with it. But anyway, we hop back over to Earth today.
Yeah, we know this big old snake jet.
Skylynx, you're looking horrifying. I kind of love it.
I want it. Can we? I guess this episode is just full of digression. What about him as a lynx exactly?
I don't. No.
Does he have, like, claws? He does.
Well, he does.
He's got those.
He's got big old
teeth. But he's also got a snake neck.
Yeah, I think that was just a cool name.
He's like a manticore or something. I don't know. Yes, you're right. Skylynx is a cool name. I will absolutely concede that. Anyway, as usual, he's trying to tell a story and gets cut off by a bunch of punk teenagers.
All these damn kids. They're so excited that Dad's back.
we got our fun team, Gimlet and Bump, and
they're so cute.
They're really fun. Just give me a book of these guys. Give me Transformers New Mutants.
We're all cute. But they want to know about the
right,
who
was
on the
ship. Were they mechanical like us, or soft and squishy like Earthlings?
So cute. And were they excited to meet you? Did you intimidate them?
You're a prime. How did they feel about that?
Yeah.
He's like, it didn't come up.
Nobody asked. They're all they just want their dad to tell them a story. And as they're all, and you can just imagine, like, the din in the room is all these damn kids are just, what next, Optimus? Then what happened? And Soundwave loses it. And Optimus even calls out, he's like, oh my god, Soundwave, this is very unlike
he's
you.
Like, hey, is everything okay?
And yeah, because he shouts at all the kids, he says, this is a serious situation. And of course, he's Soundwave, so he can project even more. We can see them covering their ears or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So he can use sound as a weapon, and he just did it.
And he says, well, I'm upset because I know who the Junkions are. And then on these next two pages, this is where I was like, oh shit, this is some Jack Kirby stuff. Like, these look red, especially with the colors.
Yes, very old school here.
Yes, it looks awesome. And he's explaining the death world of Junkion and how it was just a small little battle that made no difference to the war. And Prowl led the Autobots and Shockwave led the Decepticons. And these two entirely logical beings against the madness of Junkion.
I love that line.
And we can see there's like all kinds of wild shit on Junkion. There's this big squid monster and crazy, like, it looks like some 60s ass Silver Age comics.
Yeah, we have some of the B-spots here, which of course then is like, well, they weren't on Eukarion, but they were here. But that's okay. That's okay. We're going with it.
Whatever. It's comics. Yeah.
It's comics, everybody. It's just how it is. But yeah, it's a really cool, very old school looking battle. It looks great. I love this panel of Soundwave has Silverbolt flying in at him there, and Prowl and Shockwave are right on each other. But also, look at where Prowl's hand is.
Prowl's just straight up groping Shockwave here.
Shockwave is like reeling back and like, whoa, that's what we're doing now. He's just kind of like, hey.
He's like, weren't we just punching each other? What is, are you palpating me? What's going on?
He got confused and like he was reading a book about fighting and he got it confused with the steps to like making out. So he's like trying to get to the bases because he just got the two books confused. That's my theory
here. I love it. I love it.
So Shockwave, for having no face, does look very much like what is yeah. happening.
It's a world style like shock and surprise moment. And I love that the little bots are like, huh, if Prime was there, this all would have been sorted out immediately.
Oh my goodness, the little divisions, they're so amused with themselves. Yes, that's their little, like, they're whispering to each other as Soundwave's telling his tale.
Right, and Soundwave's saying, like, yeah, well, maybe, because the planet did blow up.
Yeah. So we do see that, right, they just, the gravimetric core.
Yes.
Was calculated to produce the greatest offense yield with the least loss of defensive assets. But it doesn't, like, one of them figured it out.
Yes.
Either Shockwave or...
Yes, either Prowl or Shockwave blew up their planet.
Right.
And they it says detonated the planet. And what a cool panel, because we see both the Autobot and Decepticon ships flying off, and Soundwave is in the back here, and we got this Kirby crackle all over it, and
It looks great.
Oh, it's so rad. Like, that's a... be a bitch in print, or, like, get put on the side of a van.
I would totally drive that. Can be the Sound Outwave van.
Here we go. And so they say another civilization trampled by Cybertronian boots.
And he kind of, the divisions now are a little more somber. Like, okay, they just got told. And even Gimlet's like, God, you two. Jeez, Shockwave and Prowl used to be Prime's friends before they turned evil. Be nice. And then Prime says, Prowl did not turn evil, and I wish this was a video show so I could give the camera the look I would have given Prime in this situation.
Okay, but here's the thing. That's exactly what happens, because RC, like, looks into the camera, like, fucking Jim from The Office style as this happens.
My note literally says, RC's giving the face that I want to give. RC is Jimming to the camera right now. You and I, same page. RC, also on the same page with us. Clearly, Kay, same page. All of us, we get it. We know exactly the look to give Prime when he says, Prowl did not turn evil.
Guess what?
Honey.
Yeah, you severely overestimate. Yes, RC knows what's up. RC, you got my back.
Thank God you're here, RC.
And so we all just ignore Soundwave's story, and people are saying, like, okay, what do we do now?
Yeah. Right, like, thanks for that, Soundwave, anyway, who cares? And, Aileron is like, and I do love it, because she's like, what are the tactics, boss? And he, of course, is, we're going to resolve the situation quickly, and da-da-da-da-da. And she's like, yes, great, but, like, literally, what
right, like,
do
how
next?
Do we...
Like, do we go to the store? What are our next... immediate steps.
And he says, we go and see them.
Yeah, we're going to have a mixer. We're going to go talk to the Junkions.
And we get a little bit more of Zilong's story here. We've kind of gone over it. But he is saying that the EDC, there was this original group called, what was it, something?
It was Skywatch.
Skywatch, yes. Right. And then that turned into the EDC. And it was definitely this American group. And the PLANF was sort of formed as a response to that. And, you know, all this, the Americans were asking for their help. And he did it because that was, you know, the Earth.
It was the right thing to do. Right. He specifically says he wasn't there to gloat. He's not Spike Witwicky.
Oh,
and we all liked Zilong a little bit more than we already did.
Anytime anyone dunks on Spike, I'm in.
Hell yeah. And it is, because then, of course, he's hanging out here with Spike.
Right,
because they're outside they're outside of the ship seeing Autobot City show up to the Junkion ship. And, and Spike says, we didn't, I can't believe you sent everybody home. Like, things weren't like this when I was in charge.
Me, I kill Autobots every day. That's, like, my whole thing.
And Zilong rightly is like, yeah, you fucked up, and you're the reason we're in this position, so shut up. That's why you're not in charge.
Yeah, and he's saying, why'd you just let him go? That was stupid. He's like, hey, guess what, dumbass? I'm your boss now. Why don't you shut your dick?
Because, yeah, Spike is like, we used to be friends.
You used to be like, cool. What happened?
And he was like, first of all, Spike, you still owe me like $500. Secondly, I'm your commanding officer now. Shut up and listen to me. And then, of course, Flint, and I think this is supposed to be Baroness.
Oh.
I don't. Yeah. A lot
isn't,
of people.
Isn't Baroness a cobra?
Yeah, current Baroness. A lot of people like to write current Baroness to be, oh, she was a spy the whole time. Because women aren't allowed to actually be evil. Sure. They always have to be brainwashed.
Naturally.
Or be spies. And I hate that. I really do. I'm sorry, everybody. I like Baroness when she's hanging with Cobra and dunking on Cobra and in love with Destron.
Yeah, I'll
That's
take
the
it.
Baroness I like. So I think this is supposed to be her, but whatever. Who cares? She and Flint are just talking, and it's more Joe stuff, and they're like, hey, we have some information. They're trying to read the ship. They're trying to read the junkie on ship.
And so we do see some people in here. Barwani even is we're getting readouts and saying like, do we or Talon Xilong is saying, how long do we have until we figure out what the hell is going on with this thing?
Yeah.
And within the hour, and we get more of Xilong's voiceover saying like, now that I'm part of G.I. Joe. Which is an American team that says it's a global team. Am I proof that things have changed, or am I just like a token that they've adopted as a cover for their own horse shit?
I'm glad that he's aware.
Yeah, like that's a cool angle to go with this character.
It is. I appreciate him. I appreciate that writing.
And so we go back to Cybertron, and Prowl is interrogating Jetfire.
Yes.
Yes. And Jetfire's like, I'm not going to tell you anything. And Prowl's like, don't worry, I'm already smart enough to know everything ever, so you don't have to say anything, whatever. I don't even need you here. You know what? Get out. I don't like you.
He is essentially saying he's already read just the things that he already knows about Skyfire and the situation. Essentially, I don't even know what he's... Yeah. Oh, he's saying he lives in the Low City, and... because he has to kind of keep a low profile because he is a scientist who's also a flyer.
Right. He's defying functionism.
Yes. And so essentially what he's getting at here is that he thinks Jetfire was put up to it. Like Jetfire has been like attending Decepticon meetings and somebody is trying to rally people to kill Orion or just Autobot or yeah, like the Autobot cop, because he's saying Jetfire didn't know he knew about Orion Pax, but he did not know enough to know his name. So he thinks he was just given information on him.
Called him that Autobot cop.
Yes.
And he says, so either you, he says, you didn't fight to the death, which means either you have some common sense, which he doubts, or the Decepticons aren't as fanatical as we're told, or you're just playing Decepticon. And I would also like to point out, like, dude was ready, like, dude had no choice. Like, Optimus totally put him on the ground.
Right. So, I mean, I guess, right, the fact that he didn't continue to resist until he was killed, I think is what Prowl's getting at, but sure. Right, like, he was taken out very quickly, he was subdued very quickly. Also, I am digging this pink lighting.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I love this.
Oh, yeah.
God, these colors are so good. I think I like it so much because Josh keeps using very garish colors, very thoughtfully,
yes.
And I'm in love with that.
I totally agree.
Yeah, like, good job. I'm always thrilled when people use color well, and so I'm just delighted by these books.
Consistently infatuated with like, fuchsia hot pink on black.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, yes. I'm a big fan.
Yes, and anyway, Jetfire protests and says, no, I'm not playing anything. Prowl punches him in the face because, sure, that'll get results. And he says, we want to uncover who killed the Decepticon. And he's saying, well, do you think I killed him? What do you...
Yeah, Jetfire's like, I don't...
Right, like, what do I have to do with that?
Yeah. So he's, of course, saying a cop killed him. Same happens as every day.
Right.
And And Prowl's like, so then you, by your own admission there, know that we could kill you, and I'm not telling you that that is a threat. I'm telling you to stop for a second and maybe work with me, and if we just work together, we can maybe figure this out. And Jetfire is like, cool, I will work with you if you stand up and say Hefter was murdered by the police and he was innocent. And Prowl, of course, is then saying,
yeah,
we want to
help
do that,
us prove
but we
that.
Want to be able to prove it.
Right.
Yes.
And he says, so why did you punch Orion Pax? And
yeah, like,
he's
who
like,
wanted you to kill him?
Because I fucking wanted to punch Orion Pax, dude. Why can't you believe that? And he says he just wanted to do his job, work at the lab, get his degree. And then a cop came in, the one that stood up to the Senate. And Prowl says, well, you didn't like that he stood up to the Senate? He's like, no, I like that. The problem is that cops kept on killing people and he stayed a cop.
Yeah, which, I mean,
pretty good argument.
Pretty good argument.
If you are a member of a corrupt police force, get out of the police force.
Yeah. I mean, and it is, right, it's one of those where you want to, the good ones want to take out the bad ones, and it's very gray. It's
everybody, go watch the movie Serpico. It's Al Pacino. You're going to love it. One of my favorite movies of all time. It's about this stuff. Go watch Serpico. That will be my commentary on this. But yes.
So essentially, yes, Prowl's like, okay, so nobody straight up said,
right, nobody said
kill
Orion Pax, but somebody had to tell you about him so that you could know that all this stuff happened. And who was that?
Who was it? He just wants to talk to him.
That's
Prowl,
right.
You're really making it hard, buddy. Trying to help you out here. He keeps ending on like villain notes, and I'm like,
exactly.
Come on.
I mean, that's,
you're ruining my argument.
That's such a fucking thing about Prowl is like any individual thing he does, like if he had earned any amount of trust, he could probably get by on. But it seems like everything he does is just like, okay, the first thing I need to do to accomplish this is throw everyone I know under the bus. B, make sure everyone doesn't trust me. Like, it's just, I can write a book on the guy.
Ooh, that'd be an interesting read. We could cover it in the show.
Sure.
But I will at least give this much. Like, when I talk about Prowl of old, it certainly wasn't, like, this wide-eyed innocent. Like, there was always this kind of attitude towards him. Where,
sure.
Like, he was always willing to be a little underhanded. It just wasn't so full-blown and, I want to say, obtuse. He wasn't as just like, well, who cares? I'm going to get results. Like, he was... I don't know. It's hard for me to explain exactly.
Like, huge digression. I'm so sorry.
Sorry, everybody.
X-Men kind of has a concept like this, where Cyclops, there was this huge, dumb thing called M-Day, where now there's only, like, 500 mutants left in the world, right? And Cyclops becomes, like, the leader of all mutants. And he says, look, everyone's trying to kill us. I need a team that can work in the shadows and do the shit to, like, eliminate threats in ways we don't all feel comfortable with before they wipe out all mutants. And so he forms X-Force, which is, like, Wolverine and a bunch of people who are, like, morally gray and willing to kill, right? And that, I feel like, if that's what Prowl is, that's fine. But Prowl doesn't take orders from anybody. He just does these things of his own accord.
Right. And so I think that's where it's... So what you were saying before, I feel like that's where my Prowl always was.
Sure.
He was always that morally gray. Like he,
and I totally understand that concept, and I'm like, I'm for it. Like, I get the idea of someone like, we need a team that like, we can just make the tough decisions and like, that's fine. Like, we'll deal with things in ways that aren't going to be popular. That's okay. And I get that that's where Prowl comes from. And I'm totally for that. But as you have stated, like the Prowl that we're seeing now is not has no responsibilities.
Right. Exactly. So yes, that's a perfect way to put it. And you're right. Because he doesn't act like he has to, like, answering to Prime is not a big deal to him. Like, he doesn't care. He's not worried about what, because whatever, he'll just, So, okay. Yeah, I think that makes total sense. So I'm with you. I'm totally with you. And then that, now you have a good idea of where I'm at.
Absolutely.
The prowl I keep reaching for. That sure. I'm like, I know.
That makes sense.
He just kept going and he didn't look back. So, because you got to remember, everybody, if nothing else, Chrome Dome used to be in love with this dude. And Chrome Dome's a great guy.
I do like Chrome Dome.
He's pretty great. He's got a cute husband now. I'm happy for him.
Everything's coming up, Chrome Dome. and so we go back to Autobot City.
Yes.
RC is talking. This is very, very sweet.
It's so sweet.
She's talking to Sideswipe, who is still comatose. Yeah. And in the...
Which, if we'll all remember, they're part of my... In my headcanon, these two are dear friends.
Yeah.
Which, this is the closest I'm getting to it. She does say, like, don't take this to mean that I like you. I'm like, you like him.
Right.
You guys are BFF.
She says, don't take this to mean I like you or anything.
But yeah, she's just kind of, she goes to talk to him. And this is what, yeah, she's been doing for a little while now. He's comatose.
And she even says, yeah. I felt like we understood each other. Like,
yeah.
And then she corrects herself to say understand, which is even sadder.
Oh, Sideswipe, wake up. But yeah, so she's kind of over here to hang out with her buddy who gets her. This guy understands. This guy is on her level. Now she's got to deal with all these freaking kids, and she's sick of it. So that's kind of what she's getting at here.
Right. Well, this part is really interesting to me because she says, Sideswipe, you knew the score, and these kids don't, and the Earth sure as hell doesn't. And so, like... again, going back to my curiosity of, like, what are the Autobots about? I get the feeling that RC and Sideswipe knew, like, they had reasons for being on this team. And whereas right. these new kids are just like, wow, we like the Prime, you know?
Sure. Oh, certainly. Yeah, it's definitely a different reason she is here and why Sideswipe was here or is still here. But, like, obviously he's
sure.
been brought here now because he's been comatose. Yeah, certainly, certainly. There's a different reason the two of them are fighting. And, you know, that was part of why they understand each other so well, too, was that they're both willing to kind of go ham in a battle. Like,
right. And they've come to terms with, like, any moral sacrifices they need to be on this team. Like, they've gotten over that by this point. Like, they're aware yeah. of everything that's happening, and they're okay with it. And that's
right.
interesting to me. I like that.
Yeah, it's very cool. I'm glad we got this little moment with her and Sideswipe. And as she's talking, Jetfire walks in, and she's like, oh, I definitely wasn't talking to Sideswipe.
That would be weird if I did that, but it's a good thing I didn't.
Wouldn't that be strange? I wasn't doing that. And he's like, well, how's he doing? And he then starts, he gets mad at Doc because Doc was supposed to tell him if this thing had an effect or not, or didn't. So, because Doc was in the room while RC was talking
right.
to Sideswipe.
Poor Doc.
Which I like to think that maybe he didn't do anything because he's like, well, I'm going to let her have her moment.
Yeah, what a sweet
I'll go
boy.
Get Skyfire. Yeah.
Oh, good little Doc.
He's so good. Protect him. And it is funny because, of course, Skyfire speaks Doc. So Doc will chirp and tweet in these, and Skyfire will just respond.
Yeah, it's an R2-D2 situation.
Yes. So they're talking about what they're going to try. So they're just trying to wake Sideswipe up, and he's saying the spark corrosion, nothing's stopping it.
Right, like, it's getting worse.
Yeah, which was very concerning to me reading this. I'm like, no, I just got my twins back. Don't you do this to me. So they're going to try something else. And then Jetfire's like, okay, come on, RC. We got to go.
Yeah,
because
family meeting.
Yeah, we got to do the family meeting. And then the Rager starts after that. So, Mixer, sorry.
Right.
And I mean, it might turn into a Rager, but it's going to start as a Mixer. And we do cut to
yes, we're out on deck, and I like this little line. Eleron says, "There's still time to back out," which is such
he says,
"Well, that passed 4 million years ago." But like, what a cute thing for her to say! Like, we don't have to do this;
we can just let the humans deal with it. She's very cute, and so the Junkions come over in a smaller ship. And they're like, oh, geez, maybe we shouldn't have spent all that time cleaning up. These guys are disgusting. And so they land. And, of course, here come some more trash bots. We like them.
Yeah.
They're here.
Good old
they
trash
can't wait
boys.
To... Yeah. They're going to have some drinks. Welcome to Autobot City.
They're very impressed by the Titan.
Yes. And And so we see, then this is where we start seeing, like, of course, Rhaegar is doing his thing. He's oohing and aahing, and he's being distracted and just spouting his lines, and Ramaj is...
He's doing a shtick.
Yeah, and Ramaj is kind of just like...
Knock it off.
We can, yeah, see some tension here. And Aelaron even notices this, and she is saying to Skyfire, she's like... She says something's up with that lady and the boy, like they're not getting along, which is interesting because then it's like, did something just happen? Or right. Is this just how their relationship is?
I do think it's funny that he says it's hard to find hats for Titans.
Oh, yeah. That's a line from Rhaegar, like, man, how do you put a hat on that guy?
And so we're walking them through the ship and saying, they're basically trying to say, you have nothing to offer us that we don't already have.
Look at our glorious ship.
It's always very advanced.
Yeah, we have everything we could possibly need. Meaning you, again, and they don't want to come out and say, you're made of trash, I don't think you have anything we could possibly
use. But they're definitely trying to say, like, go away, you are trash and don't have anything we could possibly use.
Exactly. And even, yeah, Jetfire keeps catching himself and saying, I mean, no offense, but you're trash and you have nothing we can use.
And naturally, Rhaegar is like, oh, hey, what's in this room? And, of course, Sideswipe is in that room.
Yeah, he sees a comatose person. He wants to go in and look at him.
Who doesn't?
Like, look at this guy. He's so pretty. Does he turn into a Lamborghini? I want to look at him. And I'm with you. I do, too. Let's wake that boy up.
And he's like, wow, he really looks beat to shit.
Yeah, this dude looks terrible.
And Rumadge is like, I apologize. He was wounded in the heart, she says.
Yeah.
When he first encountered your race. Which weird.
Yeah, interesting. And one of those where you're like, are you making shit up? Are you playing us right now?
Right.
What are you doing, friend? And of course, Arcee is like, don't let him in there. Don't touch Sideswipe. And of course, Optimus is like, okay, hang on, just give me a second. But before Prime can do anything, Jetfire is like, whoa, hold up. This dude's got something.
It's a positron core.
He's got a positron core.
And Aelaron is like, what's a positron core? And he's like,
yeah.
Oh, it's everything you need to bring this guy back to life. Except I say it with a lot more jokes, he says.
Right. But he does, yes, spark core destabilization and da-da-da-da-da. We can help him out. We can fix all that.
It's a floor polish and a dessert topping. And there's, I do love that Rumadge is like, surely nothing you care about with your fancy medical equipment living on a Titan on a world brimming with energon.
Yeah. And what you could use, I'm sure.
It's such a good jam because of such a well equipped hospice for him to slowly die in.
And she's not wrong. Right. And that's the moment, of course, where you're like, yep, here it is. There's the card that they can play.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, though, and I like it, because Rhaegar doesn't go, I have this, and, like, kind of hold it. You know what I mean? He's not playing the game here. He's just like, well, of course, he's being funny and hilarious like he does. But, yeah, they're saying, okay, that really is a positron core.
Right. Jetfire's confirming, like, if that thing is what this is, then yeah, it could really, like, save Sideswipe and pretty much anyone else we come across.
Right. That could be super helpful. And Optimus is like, well, shit, now I have something we want. These trash boys have done it.
I guess we're going to have to give them War 13. I don't see any repercussions for that.
Not at all. Again, if they're going to make a planet where we just danced a Weird Al, it's going to be great.
And so we cut back to G.I. Joe here. And Talon Zilong is talking with, I guess this is Baroness, is what we decided?
Yeah, I think her name is Erica here, which I don't think that's Baroness's name. That's where I was very confused. I was like, I don't know what's going on here. I apologize. If people listen to this, follow the IDW G.I. Joe stories,
feel free to
let us know.
Tweet at us.
Yeah.
And so Xilong is saying, you know, this thing has no signals or transmissions. And she's saying there's no explosions either, which is weird because Cybertronians tend to have a lot of those. It just seems to be Xilong talking more about, like...
Right. We're getting a little bit more padding to his story and kind of where he feels he is at this moment.
Right. And whether this G.I. Joe thing is going to pan out.
Well, and yeah, and this, because I know her code name is Chameleon, so he's talking to Chameleon, and she's saying the Joes are tough to crack. She was with them a long time before she felt comfortable. And even that isn't right. She doesn't. Like, that's not how she feels even now. So, you know, kind of trying to be on the same page with him. Right.
And she's saying that, you know, Plamp was doing just fine, and he was in total control of it until it all fell apart, and now, like, what we have is G.I. Joe, and it just seems helpless, and we really need to turn this around. And thankfully Sanjay says, hey, I think I have something that can turn this around.
Thank goodness. Thank you, Sanjay. And so they hop in, and they talk to Mainframe, but not that Mainframe, G.I. Joe Mainframe.
Right.
And they're separate, like,
mainframes.
Yeah. So, you explain this thing. Explain what you've found. And, they're essentially saying that this, the energy field, like the ship.
Right. This is interesting. Yeah. It has some sort of energy field cloaking that, like, makes it invisible to any kind of scanner or camera or spectrograph, but human eyes can see it just fine.
Right. So he's saying that they can isolate the wavelengths that the shield, with which the shield is operating.
Yes.
And, like, essentially saying, like, we can figure out how to shut it down or, and then of course they bring up BlackRock and the fact that, like,
he would know. He had all kinds of information on this stuff, but he's gone.
So now they have to, so essentially they're like, okay, because they're just worried about the fact that this is an alien vessel.
Yeah. They don't know what's going on here. They don't know what a Rekgar is.
Right.
They've never heard Weird Al in their lives.
That's why they're all so sad.
Yeah.
And so, of course, they're like, well, we can't go to Optimus because, like, if we need Cybertronian technology, like, which is essentially what they're saying with BlackRock, because that's what he, you know, was basically doing. And so they're like, well, if that's what we need, we're not going to Optimus.
Yeah. There is someone we could call. No, you don't mean.
Oh, yes. Thank goodness, readers.
Look at this, seriously. This big boy.
Thank goodness. I'm so glad. Yes, we turn to our last page. And our hero is here.
It's good old Thundercracker. And he's chilling at some old cat thing, he says.
TC straight up chilling. Yeah, he's just lounging on the Sphinx.
Yeah, he's reclined against the Sphinx.
He's got baller sunglasses on. Like, big old pink visors.
Yeah.
The grades. I love it. He looks wonderful. It's great. And,
and he's
just hanging out. What's up?
He's just dogging on it. He's like, it's supposed to be old, but it's, like, less than 5,000 years. I mean, like, who cares?
Yeah.
Whatever. You built a statue.
Like, way to go, guys.
Great job.
It doesn't even matter. Congratulations. And we can see, oh, he's hanging out here with Marissa.
Yeah. What a cute dress Marissa's wearing.
She looks adorable. She's got a hat on. She's wearing a dress. She's got her camera.
Yeah.
Wise woman.
We're just, like, on vacation. I love
this.
They're
totally on vacation. So we have to just, I'm like, okay, so TC flew her here.
Yeah.
To look at the Sphinx and the pyramids and everything. That's adorable. Because she's dressed for it. Like,
yeah,
this is
absolutely.
A planned outing.
She's got her big camera.
Yeah. We've got Buster, of course.
Of course.
As always. So she wants to know who's on the phone. And he tells her it was a wrong number. Which, of course, is ridiculous. She's just like, shut up. And she walks away. But, hell yeah. Hell's yeah.
Hell's
he's
yeah.
He's into it.
He's been spending too much time in California. It says, hell's yeah.
But under one condition, and we'll have to find out what that is next time.
I can only assume it's that Buster get all the credit.
I could see him doing that.
Buster becomes the national dog.
Ah, I love it.
The official
Buster,
dog
you did it.
Of Earth.
She becomes the council member.
Yes, I love it. Perfect.
That's what it is. That's how we're going to solve all of our
problems.
Buster
just up there growling and barking against all these Cybertronians.
She would not like Starscream because has probably told her all sorts of stories about Starscream. She would have a bone to pick with him. You got me. But look how good TC looks in that last panel. He looks good in all of them.
Catching some rays. Good. Just maxing and relaxing.
Yeah, I like it. TC, I'm so glad you're here.
I love it.
I always feel like relief when I'm like, oh, good. You guys, TC's here.
What a fun note to end on.
Yeah, so it is a bit of a cliffhanger, but TC's here, so we're all good.
Well, we're in good hands.
Best way to end. Yes. Got a lot to look forward to, and that'll all be next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to it, and I think that's what we got this week, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, I want to say thank you so much to our McAdams patrons, David Cabrera and Jay Riley. If you're interested in hanging out at the bar with us each week, and running up
the tab,
chilling with Waspinator, then go ahead and go to patreon.com/soundwav. You get it.
It's not, soundwav.
It's not hard to
soundwave
find.
Soundwave without an E.
Yeah.
You got it.
And
yeah.
Yeah. Next week we'll cover 3 and 4. It should be a real good time.
It's going to be great. We'll see you all there. For now, Transformanauts, where do you want to go on vacation?
I was just going to ask, Transformanauts, we got a lot of options here. What sounds fun?
Yeah. Are you jealous of TC, or would you rather see a city? What's up?
You want to go somewhere beachy?
Ooh. They would be able to go far into the water, too. I think that's a great idea.
Hang 10, Transformanauts.